Are there any more questions from yesterday? Regarding the, what do you call it? The points that we made yesterday. Basically, yesterday, we were making the, we were making the point that the Daivavarnashram system is rooted in the spiritual realm, because the original culture, I mean the culture that is followed in Daivavarnashram, is the culture of the spiritual realm. Then it reflects into the material world based on our material desire, in other words, our conditioned nature. So then the system for elevating ourselves from the reflection to the original is through the process of performing the activities of the material world according to Krishna's direction for Krishna's satisfaction. And then by doing that, then one becomes purified. This is what Krishna describes in the Gita. So the Bhagavat Marg, which is the main point, that establishes our, how do you say, that is the hearing, chanting, remembering, in other words, the chanting process of chanting the holy name, which is the essential aspect of the whole Vaishnav culture. Then, the next is, for the conditioned soul, he needs more than this. So the sadhana bhakti, or the pancharatra, then that establishes for us the various rules and regulations that keep us from getting into sinful activities. In other words, those activities, the sadhana keeps us situated in the mode of goodness, and directs us, gives us the opportunity to perform activities in pure goodness, or practice activities in pure goodness. And then the Vedic system is to take care of the details of material of association in the material world, how different individuals interact with each other, you know, according to their various status and position that is there by their conditioned qualities. Like someone is older or younger, what is the relationship? You know, someone is in the position of administration, someone is not. They're a citizen. What is their relationship between the parents and the children, husband and wife, the parents and their parents, the child and the grandparents, all these different relationships, then how that is dealt with. So that is given in the Vedic culture, the Vedic system there. So if we take all this together, then this is Daivavarnashram. Means the transcendental system of engaging our conditioned nature in the service of the Lord. That is the whole process of Daivavarnashram. And that the essential point is that whatever we do, if it's done for Krishna, then it takes on the transcendental nature. If it's not done for Krishna, then it's situated in whatever modes of nature that it deals with. But if we perform it for Krishna, then the activity itself takes on a transcendental quality and we become purified by performing it. So that's basically what we discussed yesterday. So are there any questions left from yesterday? Otherwise, we'll move on. Yes?
You mentioned that the process of gradual elevation is from Shudra to Vaishya to Kshatriya, then to Brahma, then to Vaishnava. Is it possible to go through these steps in one life, or it takes many lives?
I see. Nice. Okay. Question is that the gradual process that Krishna talks about is going through the processes of karma, or then goes through these platforms of Shudra to Vaishya, Vaishya to Kshatriya, Kshatriya to Brahman, then Gyan, then the Brahman becomes educated, and then the Brahman actually understands his relationship with the Lord. He comes to the platform Yoga, and in this way then comes to the devotional platform. So that's the slow pass. So can someone do that in one lifetime? Can they do that more quickly? Can they do that more quickly? So Krishna is recommending this as the fast path. The fast path means that we perform whatever our conditioned nature, whatever our activity for Krishna. Then, if we're doing that, this takes on the quality of Nishkam Karma Yoga. And in the platform of Nishkam Karma Yoga, then whatever activity we're performing it for Krishna. Whatever activity we're performing it for Krishna. Then it has a transcendental nature. So then even one is, this is also a secret thing of it, is that even though we may be performing the occupational duties of a Shudra, if we are doing it in the mood of Nishkam Karma Yoga, we are not a Shudra, we're a devotee. So a devotee automatically is a realized Brahman. It means one who understands that he is a devotee of Krishna. So the Daivavarnashram, the culture, or the medium of exchange and relationship between people is based on the Brahminical culture. That everyone within the Daivavarnashram understands they are devotee of Krishna, and they understand that they are servant of Krishna, and they understand that whatever they do, according to the conditioned nature, is for Krishna's pleasure. And the results of that activity are for Krishna. So that is the purpose of the system. So this means that the person in this system then is automatically a Brahmin. Right? By character, by culture, by values. Though, by occupation, they may be a Brahmin, maybe a Kshatriya, maybe a Vaishya, maybe a Shudra. That doesn't matter. This is another aspect of the Daivavarnashram that is more hidden. That is not, how you say? It's not easily understood. Right? We see Srila Prabhupada is bringing devotees, and because they understand this, they're performing all the Brahminical activities. Right? Means if you have things go from subtle to gross. So Krishna mentions in the Gita, because of the mind, we have certain desires. That develops for us certain senses, a group of senses. So the desires in this life create the senses in the next life. And then all those senses, then we get that body that has those senses, which are all grouped around the mind. Right? So this means if you change the mind, you change the consciousness, then you actually change the gross body. Therefore, by the process of Pancharatra, when we accept that we are servants of the Lord and take initiation through the Pancharatric process, the body changes. And it is no longer now just that body then is fit for sacrifice. In other words, when our mentality changes, then the gross body is automatically follows. So this is a very important element of the Daivavarnashram, that it is according to guna and karma. Whatever is your nature, that is what's being followed. Then we see that one is able to elevate themselves very nicely. So it doesn't matter what we're doing. If the mentality is that of a Brahmin, that means, I mean, of a devotee, we're automatically a Brahmin. Though we may have the conditioned nature of any of the four varnas. And we will perform the activities according to those four varnas. So this is important. It's very important. In other words, we can see that to actually make the varnashram system work, we must understand the subtleties. If we don't understand the subtleties, we cannot actually make it function. Right? So these subtleties are, what is the purpose behind it? What is actually going on? What is the function? Like that. Does that make some sense? So, therefore, even one is a Shudra, if he understands he is a devotee of Krishna and acts in that capacity, then in that lifetime he can go back to Godhead. Because it's the conditioned nature that's a Shudra. The soul's not a Shudra. Right? Yes? Okay. Yes or no? Okay. I'm asking you if it's yes. Not that you say yes because I said yes. It means if you understand, it's your question. You say yes or no. Huh? Okay? And then he's translating, but he's translating everything. I'm talking to him, but he's talking as if it's not. Okay. Huh? Okay. So that is the point. That's why Krishna is saying take the fast path. The fast path means we just change the consciousness. The consciousness changes the identity, right? Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyasa. That is identity, our ego. Right? So that changes that. That changes our intelligence, how we'll apply that. That changes the mind, what it values and doesn't, what it accepts and rejects. And the mind controls the senses. So you change the consciousness, you change the whole thing. Though the physical and mental condition nature remains. It's not that somebody who's very big and strong and that, or some, you know, then they change their consciousness, right? They've been carrying, you know, big sacks of rice on their head, that now that they won't continue with carrying sacks of rice on their head. Now they do it without doing it for their own purpose, but they do it for pleasing Krishna. Right? Does that answer your question? Means, question is someone on the transcendental platform, can they act according to the need, according to the varnas and ashrams, and not necessarily according to any other consideration? Generally, for example, they don't do that, but they do that. We see Srila Prabhupada as a perfect example. You know, he would write the books. He would teach them how to print the books. He would teach them how to sell the books. He would show them how to set up businesses, Spiritual Sky, and the whole how the BBT is set up. You know, he's doing all the activities. He was washing the pots. He was cleaning. It means the point is that the rules and regulations are important for the conditioned nature. The conditioned nature must be purified, must be engaged, right? Just like if you have gold, you can do certain things with gold. You can make nice ornaments, fine ornaments with gold, right? You cannot do the same thing with something else, right? You take some aluminum, you cannot make as fine a stuff. It won't be as attractive, right? You just can't do it. You know, or iron. Iron looks nice. You make some wrought iron things. It looks very nice. Right? But very fine things you do with gold. So depending upon the nature of the item, it will be engaged. So according to the conditioned nature, then one will be engaged in more intellectual activities, more managerial administrative activities, more business activities, or more artistic activities. Right? That is the nature. That's just practical. Now, So someone who is beyond the conditioned nature, they can do any of it. They don't need it for their purification. But generally we see that they follow that to set example. Like Krishna says, I have no work in this material world. There's nothing for him to do. But if he didn't work, the whole world would be ruined. Why? Because then everyone else would think, I don't have to work. So Krishna is pointing out to Arjunas, you have to work. It must be done. You must work. So he's making this point. You must work. So, and what is that work? Work according to your nature. What is the nature you have? The physical and mental, intellectual nature you have, use that. You have a lot of brains, you use your brains in Krishna's service. You don't have a lot of brains, you use something else in Krishna's service. Right? If you have a talent, use that for Krishna. Right? Like that. Of course, this is the general duties. There is also emergency duties. So in emergency duties, someone who may not have the nature to do something may do it because it has to be done. Right? Like that. But once that work is done, then it goes back to regular duties. So this is very important. If the leaders understand this, they can also operate the system nicely. Many a devotee has been disturbed in their devotional life because the leaders have pushed them beyond their capacity in emergency duties. It may be an emergency, someone has to do that, but as they keep complaining, it's difficult for them. If they keep getting pushed in it, oh, you must surrender to Krishna, this and that, that shows a lack of understanding actual nature. One has to be able to discern between just there's some ignorance there due to past association, and by giving that push, then they come up to the standard within a short time, and they're able to function, and they do nicely. Then not understanding the system is they push them to the point where they just crack and break down and then leave. So that is not necessarily that the person themselves was unqualified, but the leader themselves didn't understand how to apply it. You know? Doesn't that happen a lot? Yeah. So it's, one has to know this. What is nature and what is emergency? Let us say someone is a cook, right? They're happy cooking. They can cook all day, every day, all year. But we need to do some other thing, some other management or some other thing has to be done. So they're the only ones around that's kind of mature enough to do it, so they may do it for some time. But then if it's seen that they're starting to get very disturbed in their service, then they should be stuck back in the kitchen. And then someone else should, then they can put someone else into that emergency situation if the proper person hasn't arrived. But if for the ease of management we just use the pat term, well, just surrender, Prabhu, why doesn't the manager surrender to the point as he's got to find someone else? Why doesn't he surrender to his service to manage it? It makes it easy for him. And then, when the person leaves, then we use the term, oh, he wasn't sincere. So with these two nice phrases, then we, so many devotees are not properly engaged. So we have to, it has to be learned, understood very nicely. And you'll generally see a good leader who has an enthusiastic temple is able to understand this. Either consciously or just unconsciously, just naturally. They just understand, oh, this person is having difficulty, okay, put him back there, and then we'll find someone else or this or that, or make another arrangement like that. In other words, everybody has to work according to their position. So emergency can be done by anybody, but one has to see the length of time. Generally, the more advanced, of course, the more advanced, the more purified, the longer they can function in a particular situation of emergency. Or the emergency may be very similar to their nature, but it's just in an area they're not so interested in. You know? Like that. So let's say somebody is a deity cook. They can cook small. They can cook fine like that. You need someone to cook food for life. So they're cooks. They can cook. But they won't be fully satisfied because they want to get into the fine detail rather than just every day cook the same khichdi. That they want that variety. So they may be able to do that longer than, let's say, something else. But ultimately, one has to see. So the expert manager, then he knows, okay, these are natures. And we need this variety of services. As soon as I find someone, I plug them into that one service where they belong. Now, out of 100 different services, now I have one filled, I have 99 to go. Someone else comes along, I plug them into that one. And in this way, then they see that everybody is doing what they need. And then if there's a hole, then if it can be left, we leave it. And if it's very important, then we try to fill it by, you know, expert arrangements. Like that. So this is all the application, you know. This is all application. You know? This is the meaning. The leader means they shelter the devotees by seeing that they are engaged in services that complement their nature. Right? This does not mean there's not push, because everybody has a nature. And so the manager can naturally push to see that the best quality is gotten from that nature. That should be understood. It's not that we're saying that the managers never push. No, that's their business. They must push, because the material nature is always pushing the mode of ignorance. So the leaders have to push the mode of goodness and transcendence. Then, you know, you get some balance in the middle. You know? That's why when the sadhana is strong, the training is strong, you know, the association is strong, then we find that the naturally devotees can work more on the platform of goodness without attachment than if these things are weak. Otherwise, if they're weak, the modes of passion and ignorance come up. It's harder for the manager. So it makes the manager's life easy when there's very strong sadhana, very strong temple program, good association like that, nice prasadam, things that, you know, good deity worship. Then the devotees naturally are more situated in goodness, then it's easier to get them to work on the transcendental platform like that. But pushing must be there. One should not get wrong. It's a matter of where to push. Pushing in the condition place or pushing in emergency. So one must know the system and how to balance. Is that... You had a question?
Some other question.
Means from yourself or from others?
No, from other people.
Yeah, after. We just... Ajita Prabhu has
I was just looking at it in a broader concept. In the temple, and if we somehow we have to manage, you know, like society, and you were saying about the Shudras, the Vaishnavas, Kshatriyas, and Brahmas, but within that society there must be some elements which is not quite within the regular principles, but still they worship Krishna. For example, in the Krishna book, there are instances of prostitutes, and sometimes they worship Durga by offering meat and things like that. So, because you're saying everything offered to Krishna. So that also comes into that.
Question is that in the broader sense in the society, that when we're applying this, then what about those who are outside the realms of the four varnas and ashrams? You know, how are they dealt with? You know, as example of mentioning the prostitutes in Dwarka, or then the Kali Bhakta offering meat and these kind of things. The Daivavarnashram system is specifically meant for taking one back to Godhead. The full breadth of the... So it's a portion of the Vedic system. In other words, the higher... The principles of the Daivavarnashram and Surakvarnashram are the same. How to elevate one. But the Daivavarnashram is specific that it's for going back to Godhead. In other words, the authority line doesn't stop just at the king or the demigods or Lord Brahma or the Brahman, but it goes all the way back to Krishna. So those details that are there that focus in on that understanding of the principles, the full understanding of the principles, that's the Daivavarnashram. And then those details which only take us a certain way on Krishna's path. Krishna says there's one path. There's only one path. He's at one end and hell is at the other. So it's just how far you want to go on the path. So when your goal is the end of Krishna, then whatever is there in the path then is in connection with that. So for those who don't accept the supreme authority, then they approach Kali, they approach Durga, they approach these other demigods, which are the potencies of the Lord. And they worship there. In other words, the principle is one must accept an authority. One must accept that there's some top of the line. The authority structure must end somewhere. And so one should worship in accordance with that. The ultimate principle is understanding that end of the line is God. So those on a lower level, then they follow rules and regulations for their lower understanding. So but we ourselves don't necessarily encourage the lower understanding. They may be following. We encourage that the Vedic system must be followed. So someone may be not having a very, wholesome lifestyle. But so we just encourage them in the transcendental aspects. They chant Hare Krishna. They associate with the devotees. They read the scriptures. And slowly, slowly with time, they'll become purified. These things will automatically go away because this is the fast path. The fast path will get rid of those. If you take the slow path, then they have to go through all those rules and regulations that are there for, you know, engaging in meat-eating, illicit sex, intoxication, all these things according... Well, illicit sex never there, but whatever. Yeah, basically according to the rules. Like that. Then, that way, then, they slowly, slowly, over, you know, hundreds, thousands, millions of lifetimes, they progress. Like that. But the fast path is just you connect yourself first with the Bhagavad. The chanting of Hare Krishna and all that. Then as one becomes purified, then you can add in the sadhana. And all that. And then as one becomes more refined by that system, then one can understand the finer details of the Vedic. Like that. Means one can apply them in the life. Which is interesting because they're the most external. But one has to have the Bhagavat is the most subtle. That's actually the internal, the transcendental. So one may, by serving, develop transcendental intelligence. But one also has to see that one's material intelligence and everything else is also being purified. The conditioned nature is being purified. Then it makes it easier to work within. Like, you'll see, a rough person can understand, okay, Krishna is God, I must serve him. So the principle he's gotten. But until he becomes more purified, sometimes the fine details of that can't be applied, even though the fine details are externals. Like that. That's also a confusing element of applying the system. Is that the lower principles come later. Like, first initiation is the holy name. That's the higher principle. Second initiation, one has to have more qualification, material qualification, means one's situated in goodness, one can be clean. You know, one can be respectful, one can be dutiful. These are all attributes, you know, of the purified mind, of the pious mind. So those come later, though these are actually the lower qualities. These are servants of the holy name. So by the effect of the holy name, our conditioned nature becomes purified. Then we're able to follow more of these rules. We can see it externally. You know. That's why this answers the question, well, how can someone be advanced spiritually but still have many times be infested with material desire? Because the principles have been understood. That determination is there, but one hasn't attained enough purity to follow the details. Right? Because we work on externals. The neophyte works on externals, so that when they see externals, they think something's happening. But it's actually the internal that creates the externals. So it becomes very... Everything's very subtle. That's why it's a matter of training. Training, association, then there it's understood. So, the application is we just get them to follow the Bhagavat. Start chanting, start associating with the devotees, hear Bhagavatam, take prasadam, you know, come to the temples, see the deities and the festivals. Like this, then all these five essential elements of devotional service are being performed. Then with time, we see that they become purified, and these habits naturally just go away if they have good association. So we don't have to worry about how do we implement, you know, worship of Kali for the meat eaters. No, you just let them chant Hare Krishna, slowly, slowly they give up that taste. Right? The taste has come from unpurified desire. And as one becomes more purified, one loses that taste. Is that understood? So those elements of the Vedic culture, they're there. But we don't need to establish them in Daiva Varna Ashram. Right? They don't have to be established. We just have to establish what is the actual Daiva Varna Ashram, and that will automatically come by association. Does that make some sense?
But as long as you've got this, not establishing their principles, but that someone that, for example, doesn't connect with the Bhagavad, then he's going to create a counter current within your whole management of the whole society. Because you're going to have that group of people that, if they don't connect, otherwise you're going to have everyone that has to connect with the Bhagavad. And if some don't, then they're going to create a counter current. Mm. I mean, if they don't go up, they're going to go down, right?
Mm. Yeah.
So this is the management of those people, you know? I'm saying unless there is some heavy preaching, or even some dictatorship, you know, like in Manipur, the king said, you know, unless you become a Vaishnava, you get to pack your bags and get out.
Mm.
So unless you come to that point, and then you find that the society can be split.
Question is, or the point is that what to do if people aren't coming up to the standard and that'll create a polarity in the society. You know, because this is actually a further application. See, the first principle is that the individual learns how to apply the Varnashram system to himself, personally. What are my individual personal duties? The second step is, how do I relate and interact with others? Right? Then the third is then, for those who can follow the first two, how do we apply that and organize the community or the society or, you know, however big is the span of influence, like that. So, what you're talking about is in the third phase. But the basic principle is that if one creates the opportunity for good association in that, then those who will come up will come up, and those who don't, they may not. But that can be done by the preaching, prasad distribution, and things like that, because then they'll take prasad. Generally, everybody will take prasadam. You know, you have big festivals, people will see, take part, and this way, slowly, slowly purified. So if immediately they don't take it up, but at some later time, they'll be influenced like that. And those kind of details are, you know, farther down the road. You know, main thing is we have to worry about how to organize our own temples, communities, like that. And then as that, I say, as those who are interested, then they can take advantage, and those who are not, then, you know, that we can leave up to the, you know, that will come with time. You know, as the generations go by, then it will be seen how it expands, how it develops. Does that make some sense? Otherwise, too much detail now will not apply to most people. You had a question?
You answered it.
Oh, okay. You had another question, Uttam? No? What's it? The guru issue now, it's probably better not to. I mean, unless you see that it has some real, unless you can significantly connect it here. But we haven't gotten down to that so much yet. That will come. That will come. Yes.
The other question from the other community is how big is the possibility that one can overcome his conditioned nature and come to the transcendental level? How great is the possibility?
How great is the possibility to overcome our conditioned nature, come to the transcendental platform? Very good. It's a very good, very good. How do you say? The possibility is the odds are very high.
by ignoring conditioned nature.
Oh, by ignoring conditioned nature, then very low. Bad odds. I wouldn't put your money on that one. I'll give an example. What is the possibility of somebody getting rid of their disease without recognizing that they even have one? Right? The condition nature is a disease. Prabhupada called it skin disease, right? So one has to recognize what is. It means the main aspect of conquering the conditioned nature is accomplished by recognizing what it is. Right? This is one of the greatest obstacles, is somebody doesn't want to recognize their conditioned nature. Why don't they want to recognize? Because they're really worried that they're not going to be, you know, top of the line Brahmins, sannyasis, you know, big administrators or stuff like that. Or at least, excuse me, that was 10, 15 years ago. Nowadays, no one really cares if they're big Brahmins or this or that. Because why? Devotees have investigated enough to figure out the Brahmins don't have money and don't have the power. You know? So the men in money are with the Vaishyas and the Kshatriyas, right? So nowadays, you know, that's much more popular. So the point is that if we understand the Daiva Varnashram system, what we described before, that whatever the position one is in, if one uses that in Krishna's service without attachment, they are actually on the platform of sannyas. So it doesn't matter what is the position. They're sannyas by consciousness. And that's what we want. We can't worry about our conditioned nature in relationship to distinction, adoration, and profit. Then there's a difficulty. Then we can't establish Varnashram. Right? We can't deal with the condition, because that means people won't recognize. Right? They won't be recognized. Because it doesn't matter. In the Daiva Varnashram system, it doesn't matter. Because in the temple, amongst devotees, is that how we decide between devotees? Who's respectable and who's not? You know, somebody, you know, is in business and someone else is in welfare work, so, you know, which one is better? No. In the temple, it's just simply devotional life. Right? Devotional life. Who is more advanced in devotional understanding and realization? Who is less? Right? That's the main element. So in the temple, these things don't matter. We see in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, it doesn't matter. right? Right? We, you know, Vasu Ghosh, you know, and like that. He's leading the kirtan. But someone could say, well, he's a Vaishya. Why is he leading the kirtan? Right? You know, why not a Brahmin? Or why not a sannyasi? No, he's a Vaishya. Why is he leading the kirtan? You know? So it doesn't matter who's qualified, they do that service. Who leads nice kirtan, they lead nice kirtan. Who has good managing abilities, they organize things. You know? Who knows the puja, they do the puja. Who's good at cooking, they cook. You know, who's good at other, you know, details and all that, they do that. And then you put that all together, what do you have? A festival. But if you don't have all that, then what do you have? Right? You know, we have the Gaur Purnima festival, you know, 2,000 devotees, and each one of them is going to be the one holding the conch shell, pouring the item on Lord Chaitanya's head on Gaur Purnima at the Abhishek. Right? All 2,000 of them. Right? We have one conch shell, and, you know, like that. And that's all they're going to do. We're going to do nothing else that day, right? Because everything else is not the important, right? Who cooks? Who notices who cooks? Who notices who arranged the paraphernalia? Right? You know, who noticed that you went, you know, and dug out all the rugs and that for everybody and to sit on the floor? You know, all these different things. Who, you know, who notices who washed all the plates and cups? So we won't do these things. Because why? Because there's no honor and distinction. So therefore, we'll all stand there and we'll all hold that one conch shell. But unfortunately, nothing will happen because there won't be anyone to pour the stuff into the conch shell. And there won't have been the person who put it in the loda to put into the conch shell. There won't have been the person who went to the goshala to get the milk. There won't have been the person who milked the cow. There won't have been the person who fed the cow. You know, there won't have been the person who bathed the cow so the cow was happy so it did give milk. Because, you know... So the whole point is when everybody does according to nature, then you have a festival. That is Sam Kirtan. Complete Kirtan means everybody's engaged and everybody's doing their activity. Then it becomes very wonderful. So once one recognizes, yes, I am good at milking cows, so I will milk cows for Krishna, then Krishna has a nice Abhishek. And then one can think of Krishna and milk the cows. But if one thinks, no, I'm not going to be a Vaishya. I want to be a big manager. Right? I've seen it. There was a devotee, expert at cows. Probably one of the most qualified in our movement. 20 years dealing with dairy farming. Knows cows. You know? Like anything. But doesn't want to deal with cows. Why? Because he's just a cowherd, right? Not very interesting, right? So he decided he's going to be a manager, right? Temple manager, this, that. Tries for this. Every time he tries it, the project collapses. I mean, absolutely fails. Devotees fried, money, this, that, useless. Then he tries this a few times, gets totally frustrated, then decides, okay, now I'll be a Brahmin. Right? So in this way, you waste, you know, 15, 20 years. If he had just gone into a project taking care of the cows, they probably would have had the best, you know, best dairy farm in the movement. So like that, if one just recognizes it, then it's glorious. Whatever one does, it's glorious. Because it's being done for Krishna. The material system, we're not recognizing the Supreme Lord. We're interested in ourselves, therefore we want to situate ourselves. Right? But even with those who follow the Vedic, one may ask, well then, what about those who follow the Vedic system? Why do they agree to follow it? Because within that, then they're the best. Right? You know, somebody, let us say, he is the, how you say, he is just the bungi, right? He cleans the roads and cleans the drains and all that. But he's the best one. Why? Because he cleans only the drains and toilets in the king's palace. He's not one of these common bungis. He's special amongst bungis, right? And then the one who's out in the populace, well, they only clean for the aristocratic, you know. And like this, it just goes down the line, you know. Everybody, Prabhupada says, even the beggar is proud of his penny. So even one has basically nothing, one can still, if one accepts it, be proud of it. So like that. It's just, in other words, the living entity has to have identity. So the essential identity is, I am servant of Krishna. That's the actual identity. That's the actual identity. Then we see, okay, now what is keeping me from acting on that identity? What keeps me from acting as a pure servant of Krishna? Because I have a conditioned nature and I have desires other than pure service to Krishna. So now I should recognize that and then see how to engage that in Krishna service. Okay, I have interest in management. Okay, so then how to... Now I should then understand, okay, I have that conditioned nature, I like to manage, so now, how to manage for Krishna? So therefore, then I'll find out what are the rules behind managing for Krishna. I will see in the Bhagavatam, you know, how the different great managers there managed. I will see what Prabhupada mentions about management, you know, then our practical experience from others, what they do, and then our own intelligence applying it. In this way, then I'll see that it works. Devotees are satisfied, they're becoming Krishna conscious, you know, the yatra is developing, and then this is good. Now comes the next stage is why we're doing this. Are we doing this because for our own? I want to be recognized as a good manager and get the fruits of that, or I want to, this is my nature, I do this for Krishna, whatever results come, then that's Krishna's. It's his, whatever he sends, it's up to him. So, in the beginning, we may be working for our own interests. That's called sakam karma. But as we become purified, then we come to the platform of nishkam karma. It means that we perform it for Krishna. So this is the preaching platform. When we actually want to do it for Krishna and not for ourselves. So by performing that activity for Krishna, there's no material result, so we become purified by the same system. The example is taking out a thorn with a thorn. We have a thorn, so we get it out by using another thorn. So we have material desire that's created our conditioned nature, so we now use that conditioned nature to get rid of the desire. Like that. Or Prabhupada mentions that the disease, you take too much milk, so then you take milk, but in a transformed way as yogurt, and that gets rid of the problem that is created by too much milk. So we have too much karma for our own self, so now we use that same karma, but transformed as doing it for pleasing Krishna. Then it works very, very nicely. Does that make any sense? You had something? Who was speaking?
No.
You said you wanted to say something? Yeah. No, here.
Pancharatrika, is that para or apara?
Is the Pancharatrika para or apara? The Pancharatrika is the, I'll explain the history of Pancharatra. So Krishna had explained the Vedas to Lord Brahma after the creation, and after Krishna's creation and Brahma manifest, then Krishna spoke the Vedas to Brahma, and then Lord Brahma, after hearing all that, he wanted to know, well, what is the actual essence or purpose of this? You have a body of knowledge, well, what's the thrust? What is its goal? What is its direction? How does it actually operate? So then Brahma asked that question, and Krishna spoke to him the four verses of the Chatur Shloki. And then from that he understood this is the essence of the Vedas. It means our relationship with the Lord, engaging in the Lord's service, and anything engaged in the Lord's service is transcendental. And the goal must be pure love for Krishna. Right? So this is what the Chatur Sloki explain. Sambandhabideya Prayojana. So now, after some point, before the creation started, Brahma's creation, then the Madhu and Kaitava demons appeared. And then they went into the mind of Lord Brahma, and they stole the Vedas. And so then Brahma was a little bit disturbed at this, you know, this loss. So then he went to Krishna, and he asked him, that you please teach me the Vedas again, but before you do that, teach me the essence first. Right? Because if I die before you finish explaining the whole thing, then I won't have gotten, you know, I won't know what is the actual purpose. So Krishna in 5 nights explained to him the essence of the Veda. Therefore, that knowledge that he explained to him is called Pancha Ratra, or 5 nights. So now we see the whole purpose of the Veda is to remember Krishna, never forget him, or to worship Krishna. We understand Krishna is the Lord, we're his servant. That's the sambandha. Then the abhideya is, if we're his servant, then we should serve. So now what is the method of that serving? Right? So in the conditioned state, that a major aspect of that method of service is according to the rules and regulations. Right? And then the goal is to develop pure love for Krishna. So the Pancharatra explains this. So the Pancharatra then has 4 sections. The main section is called Jnana, which describes the knowledge of understanding how the Supreme Lord has come and incarnated as the Archamurti, as the deity. And generally in most Pancharatras, that's the largest section. Right? Then you have, Charya. I think Charya, which is like personal activities, what one does. Kriya is then the rituals of worship. And the last one I can't remember, which means it's festivals. So then, the Jnana, that is paravidya. Right? We see that in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the discussions there, or forget who he's discussing with. I think with Sanatana Goswami, then he describes this whole process. How Krishna has come down is all the different, there's Krishna expands as Balaram, then Mahanarayan, then all the Vaikuntha expansions, and the Vasudeva Shankar Shan Prajumna Aniruddha, all the 24 Vishnu Murtis, then how it comes down is Karana Daksha Vishnu, Garbha Daksha Vishnu, Kira Daksha Vishnu, like this. He explains the whole science. And then he explains at one point the details of the ritual. So the details of the ritual, that would be called aparavidya. Right? In other words, we're engaging the material energy in the Lord's service. Our body and the paraphernalia, the place, you know, all these things would be engaged in the Lord's service. So that aspect is there. You know? So that is what would be called, what do you mean, what do you call it? Yeah, that would be the aparavidya. And the paravidya is the actual understanding and the purposes behind it, what is going on. So that's why they're all connected. Like the Veda also, all the ritual of how one performs one's duties as a brahmacharya, grihastha, or brahman, or like this, that's all aparavidya. But the science behind that, why, and how that connects, that's the philosophy. That's why you have to have the philosophy and dharma together. Then it's complete. So the Pancharatra has already been done for us. Right? The Vedic system is you learn all the philosophy, and you learn all these things, and ideally you'll put it together. You may not. Because traditionally, you would find that many means there was 2 options in going to the Gurukul. Someone would go, one, for transcendental knowledge. So they would go at a young age, right? They would start very early. They would start from 5 and stay longer. Then those who are not interested in the transcendental knowledge just wanted the culture and the, in other words, the aparavidya aspects. You know, that they should know the Sanskrit, know the Vedic mantras, know the ritual, you know, like this kind of thing, know the Dharma. They would go at a later age and leave early. Right? Because the Dharma doesn't take that long to learn. You know, some years and practice and like that. But those who are actually interested in spiritual understanding, they would go early and stay later. Therefore, Prabhupada, we see in his recommendation, he says 5 to 25. He took the option in Gurukul of the for the transcendentalist. Yeah, for the Paravidya. You know? But we see in the Vedic culture that many take just the study of the Aparavidya. Like that. So they go later and they leave early. Like that. So then those who go for the Paravidya, then within their Gurukul time, they will study the transcendental knowledge and be enlightened in that way. But those who don't, they go through the material subjects, get qualified so they can perform their occupational duties and make their, you know, grihastha life successful. And then vanaprastha, then they might start to study some of the esoteric meanings behind what is the rituals they are performing, the dharma they're performing. And then later, if they get to the platform of sannyas, then they'll dedicate themselves to the Upanishads and the actual philosophy. So if they're fortunate, one, they may get through all those four stages. And if they're more rarely qualified, they may actually connect the two. That this philosophy connects with this ritual. But there's every chance they might not. Therefore, it's the slow path, and they may take so many lifetimes to actually understand that. So it's recommended the quick path to understand, to study them side by side, where this is the externals, what is the philosophy behind it? Why? You know? That's why the human life is how you say? No, it means it's the symptom. The first symptom of human life is questioning, atato brahma jigyasa. I'm doing the activity, but why? What's behind it? You know, what is actually going on? So then that aspect then creates the human being. Otherwise you have the two-legged animal that we call, you know, human. But they actually take on the human character when they ask why. Right? That's the most important. Otherwise, if they just do it out of habit, the animals do out of habit. They just do. But the human knows why he's doing. That's what makes the position very special. So the Pancharatra then is already basically like prejudged. It's already taken the essence of the philosophy and the essence of the ritual and put it together. That's why it becomes the assistant to the holy name in the Kali Yuga. It means in systems of ritual, then the Pancharatra is the main assistant to the holy name. The Vedic is then assisting that. So this is how it goes. What time is it?
11:13.
Does that answer your question?
Thank you.
Okay.
Yes. Talking about recognizing one's nature, conditioned nature, according to that. So, what is the best simple meaning of finding out what is the conditioned nature?
What is the best way to find out the conditioned nature in oneself and others? The best way is first to be able to recognize in oneself. Means one who can, it's like this. One who can follow, they can lead. Right? A good student becomes a good teacher. A good follower becomes a good leader, right? A bad student doesn't become a good teacher, right? Someone who can't follow can't lead. In other words, you can't get someone else to do what you yourself are unwilling to do, right? Like, how you say, a good manager, then the reason he can inspire others to do an activity is because he himself is willing to do it. He may have so many things to do, so he cannot necessarily wash the pots, but he has no problem washing pots. In fact, he could probably wash them the best. But since someone newer can wash pots, they're washing the pots, and he's taking care of other things that take a little bit more experience to do. Right? Prabhupada mentioned is that your temple leaders, or you know, the leaders in the movement, is that all the activities in the temple or in the yatra are their responsibility. So if there's no one to do it, they should do it themselves. It's not that, well, there's no one here to do it, it doesn't get done. No, they should do it themselves. Right? So this means that those who can lead, they can follow. So those who can understand their own nature, they can help others understand theirs. Right? In other words, someone who can find their own faults, their own anarthas, they can help others find theirs. Otherwise, you find this very common, is that it's a natural pastime of the conditioned living entity. He loves to find faults in others. Right? You know, it's very obvious to them that the whole world has to change, you know? Like that. You know, very... One has to be very careful of being very broad-minded for oneself and, you know, forgiving one's own faults and, well, you know, we have to be practical and understanding. But for others, then we're very strict and, you know, no, they have to come up to the standard and, you know, this is nonsense and, you know, like that. The Vaishnavs, the Vedic standard, and especially epitomizing the Vaishnav standard, is that one is very strict with oneself and very more liberal with others. Like that. So the first stage is being able to understand ourselves. Then those who can from the body of those who can understand themselves, then you take it to the platform of who amongst those can now understand how to see in others. Right? And then from there, then who amongst those can actually get the others to do it. Because in that you'll have basically two groups. One who can they themselves apply it to others, and those who can advise. Right? That's the basic thing. Because you have to be able to think and act according to Shastra. Right? This is very elemental. Is that to apply it to others, you have to be able to do that according to Shastra, not our own whims, what I feel. Right? As soon as we have, well, I feel, then that person is not the right one. When they say according to Shastra, then that is a group of people you can take from. So, that was just identifying his question. Now we will. See, this is a full discussion. This is basically what we were planning to get into today, but many questions, so then we'll have to do that tomorrow. Basically, the idea is that at least one of these days, we will deal with how do we identify what is the nature, and how do we see how that's engaged in the Lord's service. Okay, so that will come up. You had something?
Would you like to say something about education? What does it mean, real education?
What does real education mean? Okay, question is what is real education? See, it's a very essential point is that the whole Varnashram system is based on education. Well, on the list, on the paper, what is the timing of the class? 10:15 to 11:45. Okay. Then we're, what time is it now? Quarter past. Okay. So, education is very important. It means if you don't give the values to the next generation, the culture changes. It's just like we see in the modern culture, is that the values of the parents aren't being transferred to the children. So the children have a different culture. They eat differently, they dress differently, they have a different music, their words are different, how they interact, everything's different. Because they didn't imbibe from their parents what was their values, what they gave. So in the Vedic culture, if you wanted to go on, the educational system is of great importance. And the most essential element of that is the culture itself, the philosophy and the culture. If those are imbibed, then everything else is successful. Right? So that is very secondary, is performing of occupational duties. Because one can perform, there's people performing business. Right? They're very expert at the occupational duty of business. But in the process, they don't mind breaking so many different cultural rules and regulations. You know, lying, cheating, you know, stealing, murdering, anything. You know, wiping out countries, you know, if it's good for their economy. You know, if it makes business for them, then they don't care. You know? Right? What is it saying? It's a sucker born every minute. So it's that they just happen to be the sucker, that's all. So, but if they're not trained in the culture, how do they know what's the limit that they can go to in their business dealings? Right? I have an opportunity to do, I can get this great opportunity. But to do that, then there's two people that are in the way of that. So if we kill them, then our opportunity is very great. Right? So now, if one's not trained in culture, then one may be able to do that very easily. If one's trained in culture, one might find that a little difficult to do, just for some business, right? Whether I have $1 million or $1 billion, still I can only eat 5 chapatis. You know? Like that. You know, it's just, I can't use it. It's just greed. Right? Some greed must be there. If there's no greed, there's no economic development. Right? That's the whole process, is that greed must be there to do business. And that's not bad, because after one gives in charity. Right? It's like this. No businessman needs as much money as he makes. No question. And a good businessman basically can't even spend what he makes. You know? But there's a purpose to that, is that he'll make more than he needs, because he'll pay taxes. That will, the Kshatriyas then will then do all their work with that, and he will give in charity to the Brahmins and all that. That'll maintain that, and he will take care of the Shudras that work under him. So he has created more money than he needs for a very good purpose. He nourishes the whole society with his economic development. So greed in businessmen is not bad, but it must be within limit. It goes past the cultural limit, then it gets just too far. You know? So greed must be there, but only up to a limit. So the education, then that establishes how far they can go. You know? So what is the limits that a Kshatriya can go to? What is the limits that a Brahmin can go to? What is the limits that an artist can go to? So without education, There's no consistency, there's no control. And when that education is there, then you get a culture, because everyone has the same basic value system. They work on the same basic principles of culture. Like in the Vedic culture, everyone works on the principle of respect. Everybody. You know, the basic principles of cleanliness, right? You'll see, generally anybody who's within the Vedic system, then they value cleanliness. Their place is clean, they take their bath, you know, they cook in a fairly clean way, they, after eating, they wash their hands, they wash the place. It was interesting on that point, I don't remember his name, but the guy who put together this movie City of Joy. So then he did research in India, I think, for like 2 years, maybe even 5 years. To just see what is the slum life, you know, of Calcutta. It's like, you know, in all of India, you know, then Calcutta is the pits. So then, you know, the pits of Calcutta, then he was somehow or another interested in that. You know. So then, but one observation he made is that even though the people have no place to live, they're living in Hara station, they're still the cleanest people on the planet. Because every day, all those people are taking bath. You know, they're cleaning their clothes, they're doing this and that. You have an occasional crazy person who walks around, never takes bath, this, that. That's rare. But otherwise, everybody takes a bath. So, the Vedic culture, just cleanliness, is very important. Sense control. Everyone has to control the senses. Some more, some less. But the principle of sense control must be there. You know, knowledge. Everyone must have some knowledge in a particular area. So all these things require training and practice. So they're either educated in these things in the home, or under a teacher, or in a school, or any combination of that. But education must be there. And that's a very different thing, is that the Vedic culture is that the first guru is the mother. The mother first trains the one in the proper, you know, habits and culture and respect for others, cleanliness, all that. She's the first teacher. Then, as the child grows, they start to understand that there's a father also. And he's the next authority. Right? Then that brings in all the other aspects, the deeper, finer aspects of the discipline and these different elements. Then, with time, he understands that there's somebody above even the father. You know, he has his authorities. So like this, slowly, slowly, the whole concept or the principle of parampara is established within the child's mind. And his education is started from his first guru, his mother. And then that will be carried on, then after the mother, the father, then by the teachers. Like that. And then by the spiritual leaders. Right? And then we see by the acharyas, and then by Krishna himself. So then one sees this whole line. So it's a very important principle that one, so everybody is, that training is going on first in the home. Therefore you see is that the Indian children from, you know, how you say, respectable families, at a young age are very respectful. Very nice service attitude. They deal very nicely. They can work with peers very easily. They're very kind to those younger than them. Because they learned all this from their mother. And then that was supported by the father. Like that. So it's because the training started then. It wasn't that, well, someone later. Someone explained to me that I'm not sure it was the Middle Ages or Renaissance, then the Christian concept was is the kids just grew up in the house and you somehow or another just kept them alive, you know, you fed them and clothed them and kept them from being too crazy. And then they were sent away to the school, and then the teachers, the priests there, they would actually train them. But the parents didn't actually have to train. They didn't do any training. They just had to maintain the body. Like that. And so somehow or another that is kind of got it rooted very heavily in the Western culture. Then a problem comes is when they don't go to the boarding schools where the priests are training them in some kind, some form of, you know, religion and God consciousness, then you don't really have much training at all. So unless the family themselves is a little conservative or this or that, then not a lot of training is given in culture like that. But the Vedic system is right from the beginning that the mother is immediately teaching the child what is right and what is wrong. I've seen mothers telling a 3-year-old girl that when she behaved badly, that it was unchaste. Right? Generally, one would think you start teaching chastity when they hit puberty. No, the Vedic concept is you start teaching it from the beginning. Right? You don't get into details, right? Like that. All it is the child knows is proper behavior is chastity, improper behavior is unchaste. Right? Then you have cleanliness, uncleanliness, like this. All these different things are there. And then when they get older, then automatically you don't have to teach them what, you know, sex is. They figure it out real fast. But then they put together that chastity with the cultural chastity, and the whole thing gels, just like that. But that's been 9 years of preparation by the mother. Then at that point, now the mother can teach details. Before that, she's just teaching concepts. But that's already started. So it's a very, very nice thing. So Vedic culture, education is the most essential. So first in the family, then that is then refined and taken further by the teachers. And then once they're trained, then again, the family then situates them, you know, in their occupational situation. Like that. So it's a very nice cooperation, which is education is the central feature. So it's most important. Because if you don't educate, then they don't know why. Education also has three steps, three main phases. Well, four. Prabhupada mentions four. Is the first step is you hear, you learn what is proper and improper. Or you learn a particular body of knowledge. In any case, hearing is the first thing. Then the second thing is that you must contemplate it. It's not enough to hear. You must yourself understand it. So you must contemplate it and apply it, practice it. So by this practicing and contemplating, then this brings us to the third platform, which is realization. In other words, jnana and vijnana. Right? We hear. From hearing we get jnana. Then by practicing this jnana and contemplating it, then we come to vijnana. Then that vijnana means the essential element of it is now we understand why that should be done and we take it, we value it ourselves. We take it as our own. Right? Like we hear, chanting Hare Krishna is good. It's nice. We take it, we try it, we chant a little bit. Then we see, yes, this is very nice. It changes our life, it changes everything. Then we value it. So what do? Now we'll always chant. But until we come to that stage of valuing it or realizing it, we will not change. So unless that value is given, it won't come. So that starts by hearing and contemplating. So then sometimes parents wonder, why is it the kid is not so well developed or well trained? Because the kid hasn't heard and he hasn't been made to think about it. And he hasn't been made to practice it. So when that's there, then they will value. So the parents start the process and the teachers then continue that process. Then it works very nicely. But it has to go through. Then the fourth stage, as Prabhupada mentions, that then you teach that to others. So now the parents have realized it, you know, through going through this system. Then they teach this to their children. You know, the teachers have realized this through going through the system. They teach it to their students. The spiritual leaders have understood this through going through the system, and then they teach it to others. So everyone's gone through the system. Then they can teach. Then it works very, very nicely. Yes.
The Maharaj in the 7th canto, the last chapter, discusses a chakra he called ideal human life.
Yes.
Or ideal human society. And in one, in a couple of verses there, he describes that the brahmana, the secondary occupation or the secondary duty, is that they should engage also in vaishya activity. So I was wondering, why is it so from the mode of goodness?
Oh, question is this? Means this in the question is in the 7th canto of Bhagavatam. Then in the chapters on ideal human society, then it's mentioned that the brahmana, after, you know, if his main occupation is not there, then it mentions he can go into business. So generally, if we check very nicely, then they would go down through the system. Means they would first try for, you know, a very simple brahminical life. If it doesn't work, then they'll get into other aspects of that, you know. And then if that doesn't work, then kshatriya things and vaishya things. But they never accept service. They'll never accept working for someone else. So it goes through those stages. That's the natural thing. You'd have to just check to see that verse and those around what it's actually describing. You know, because generally the Brahmin, if he can't do his brahminical activities, doesn't necessarily just immediately go for business. He will try other ways first. Because within the brahminical occupations, there's so many ways he can maintain himself. Like that. And so many different levels that are there. You know, how he maintains himself, right? Like I said, for the Brahmin, he can either keep grains for 1 year, or he can store them for, you know, one season, right? Because rice comes up so many seasons in the year. Or he can store it for 1 month, or for 3 days, or not at all. It means what he gets, he uses what he needs that day. If there's extra, he gives that away. And so, according to the scriptures, then each one of these, in other words, as they progress from the 1 year down to the season like this, it's progressively better. So the perfect standard for the Brahmin is he keeps just what he needs that day and that's all. He's completely dependent upon the Lord. So right there you can see that there's so many options of his maintenance. Then he can just either accept what people give him in charity, or he can go out and beg from 3 houses or from 7 houses, like that. Or he can perform the Vedic rituals and take dakshin from that, right? Or he can work for, you know, advise kings and other such persons and then get the, you know, be maintained in that way. So even within the brahminical, there's so many things he can do. You understand? So it's not just, he would just naturally just drop down to business. He would go through those things. He can even go out another way, is just go to the market and what things are left on the ground, he picks those up. Or he can go to the fields, pick it up from there after they harvest. Like that. There's so many different occupational ways he can maintain himself. Is that something like that? Yeah.
We used to hear this until we act on a conditional platform in the devotional service, we're actually not performing bhakti yoga but karma yoga. Is that view correct?
We used to hear that.
Until we act on the conditional platform.
Until we act on it.
Yeah, in the devotional service. I used to hear actually it is not actually bhakti yoga but it's karma yoga what we perform. Because the devotion is the transcendental feeling is lacking. We're just doing something and offering the final result to the Lord. And it's like karma yoga. I don't know whether this view is correct.
Oh. Okay, so the question is that the question is previously it's been heard that we're performing activities according to our conditioned nature, it's actually karma yoga, and that it's not actually bhakti, because bhakti means it's being performed with transcendental emotion. So, basically, like this. Let us say we have a cook. Okay, now the cook wants to prepare a preparation. Now, the cook will just walk into the kitchen and automatically then there's things in the pot on the fire and they're going on. The cooking's happening. I'm a cook, I walk in, I want to cook some halava. Or let's say I want to cook a cauliflower sabji. As soon as I walk into the kitchen, then mystically there's a pot on the fire that's already lit and inside are already vegetables and spices and water and it's bubbling very nicely. Is it like that? Yes or no? In your experience? No. Okay. So now, I go into the kitchen, I'm going to first go, you know, where we keep the vegetables, find the proper vegetables, right? And that. So, and then I'm going to go wash them, find some knives, clean the counter, I'm going to prepare them, select a pot, make sure it's hot, warm, and, you know, proper, clean, and everything. Get my spices together. So now, would I call that cooking? No. But can I also not call it cooking? Can I say this has nothing to do with cooking? It's not cooking at all. Okay, so where does the cooking start? Right? Technically, one could say the cooking starts when I put the pot on the fire and put in the first ghee and the spices. Right? But at the same time, I can't say that all that preparation for that was not cooking. You understand? So that's the answer to the question. Is technically bhakti means prema. Below that, it is not bhakti. These are the, you're going through the stages to get to bhakti. Right? But without the conditioned soul, unless he goes through those stages, he will not get to bhakti. So because his goal is bhakti, therefore it's called bhakti. That's the meaning of anyavilasita sunyam. Anyavilasita. Anyavilasita. Right? Anyavilas is pure unalloyed. And the ita means that which is in pursuance of. So if I'm performing my conditioned activities for the purpose of pleasing Krishna and the goal of developing love for Krishna, it is called pure devotional service. Though technically we may be in the position of karma or jnana or yoga. Karma, Mr. Bhakti, jnana, Mr. Bhakti, yoga, Mr. Bhakti. Right? Depending upon our position. The kanista is generally situated more in karma mistra, because he sees the body, he sees the activities around him. So he performs the prescribed duties for the pleasure of Krishna. So that's called karma mistra. Right? Then when he starts to understand the knowledge behind it, what's actually working, I'm not doing it. The modes of nature are working. It's simply my desire. It's the spirit, soul, the consciousness, all these things that Krishna talks about in the Gita. Then the Madhyama is able to understand this more easily. That is generally what we call karma, jnana mistra. The karma is still being done, but the emphasis is now on the karma instead of the jnana. Right? And then when one comes to the platter of Brahma-Bhuta, then one is engaged in always hearing and remembering about the Lord, though pure love hasn't developed. So this is the yoga. Right? The advanced stages. What Krishna talks about of the advanced yogi, the yoga rudha. Is he's chanting and he's absorbed in the Lord's, in remembering the Lord. So that's the path that Krishna talks about. It's one path, it's his path. If you understand he's the goal and go towards Krishna, then that whole path is called bhakti. If you only take a portion of that path, then you're called just that. Let's say there's a devotee in the temple, he comes in and all he does is cut up the vegetables and then walk out of the kitchen. So he's not called a cook. He's just called a sabji cutter. Someone else comes in and washes the pots and then walks out. He's called a pot washer. Right? Someone else goes to the market, buys the vegetables, dumps them off in the back of the temple, and then walks off. He just does the marketing. So like that, someone who performs karma without the goal of bhakti is called a karmi. He's interested in the heavenly... He's looking forward on Krishna's path, but only as far as the heavenly planets. The jnani is looking forward on the path, but only as far as the Brahman. The yogi is looking forward on the path, but only as far as the Paramatma. So the bhakti yogi is one who looks forward on the path, but he sees Krishna at the end. So they all go through these phases. It means the jnani had to go through the process of karma to get to that platform of jnana. The yogi had to go through both of those also to get to the platform of samadhi and dhyan. So it's one path. Everyone goes through it. If you want to go towards Krishna. You know, if you want to go away from Krishna, then all you have to do is just do everything backwards, and then you go away. So that's the thing. So The acharyas then emphasize the point of is if it's in connection with Krishna, then it's transcendental. Krishna makes this point in the Gita, and he makes this point in the Chaturshloki and the Bhagavatam. He says, whatever is in relation with me, that is transcendental. What's not, then that's not. That's material. So if it's in relationship with Krishna, even if it's on a small platform, our consciousness may not be so developed, it's still transcendental service. Right? So those with that vision, then they can present the Sankirtan mission as very something very enlivening and something very prosperous and very encouraging. And someone who doesn't, who sees, oh, this is not bhakti and just like this, if they are not advanced themselves, so they can explain it nicely, then it puts a lid on the whole thing. No one's doing devotional service. No, Prabhupada said all his devotees are pure devotees. Why? Because at the time, everybody was really trying to just please Krishna. So even one's a Kanista, one can be a Kanista pure devotee. It's right there in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Tapan Mishra, one of the Lord's eternal associates, was classified as a Kanista pure devotee. So it's not such a bad position. So if we see with that vision, then we actually see the mission. If we don't see with that vision, then there's problems. Therefore, Prabhupada, in the beginning of the Gita, says that this Gita is dedicated to Baladev Vidyabhushan, because Baladev emphasizes this vision. It means whatever's in connection with Krishna. Means the process, you're following the process, even though it may be karma, mistra, bhakti, but it's still counted as bhakti because it's being done for Krishna. Right? That's the thing. So the preparation is also by those who are, let's look at it this way. Those who come from the spiritual realm, they are very liberal. And they see it that anything in the process of gaining pure unalloyed devotion, according to the authority, is pure devotion. Not pure unalloyed devotion, pure devotion. Prema is pure unalloyed devotion. All the other stages before, if one is doing it in the platform of nishkam, then that is pure devotion. If it is done in sakam, means for one wants the fruit, that's not pure devotion. It's still devotional service, but it's on a lower level. But pure devotional service is nishkam. I'm doing it for Krishna. Does that make any sense? Like that. So one has to... means the Gita explains this very nicely. This is what Krishna is describing in the Gita. How to perform karma, jnana, and yoga in his service. That's why he goes through the whole process of karma and then explains how it should be done for him. Do your duties without attachment for Krishna in knowledge and understanding we're not the doer. Right? So that is Nishkam Karma Yoga. So we see in Nishkam Karma Yoga it includes Gyan, because Gyan on its own is useless. Right? It's like it's the bottom of the line of Krishna's recommendation. Right? Krishna says, you surrender to... Yeah, you understand? Gyan on its own is not even in the race. You know, it's like, if you can't think of me, you know, surrender to me this moment. You know, like the gopis did or the wives of the yogic Brahmins. That's best. If you can't do that, then Krishna says, follow sadhana bhakti. If you can't do that, work for me. That's varnashram. Sadhana bhakti means pancharatra. If you can't work for me, that's varnashram. He says, if you can't do that, then at least be pious. You know, open a hospital, give something in charity. You know, at least don't bother the Sankirtan movement. And then he says, if you can't do that, then you take up the process of jnana. Because no one's purified by the process of jnana. It's the most useless of that. And then he says, better than that is meditation, yoga, and better than that is performing your prescribed duties. So it's, in the list, jnana is right on the bottom. That's if you can't be just a pious gentleman giving something in charity and this and that, you know? You can't do that. Then go off into the forest and sit down and, you know, speculate. You know? Like that. So the knowledge is only useful if it's in connection with Krishna. Therefore, the Nishkam Karma Yoga already has knowledge in it. That's why the first six chapters of Krishna, the Bhagavad Gita, are just explaining karma. How to perform your prescribed duties for Krishna. The last six are describing how to do that in knowledge. The three modes of nature and all these different things are all described there. So while performing your duties, you actually understand the position. And then the central point, the central six chapters, that is on devotion, bhakti. That is your goal. Like that. In other words, you see the central six are about Krishna. Like that. So that is what's being explained in the Gita. So one has to understand that the karma misra bhakti, or the nishkam karma yoga, that is the platform that we function at. Even we're advanced, we still... Arjuna is a pure devotee. He wanted to go to the forest. Krishna said, no, you perform nishkam karma yoga. You set example. You're beyond it, set example. You're not beyond it, then become purified by it. All right? Okay, what time is it now?
Quarter to.
Okay, so we'll end here. And then tomorrow, then we'll take up with trying to understand and identify what is our own nature. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jainita Gaur Premanandi.